Thank you. My name is Peter Doorn. I would also like to thank the ALEA for inviting me to and giving me the opportunity to give this presentation. I'm going to talk about trust in digital archives or digital repositories. I will use the words loosely. But before I will talk about that, I will spend two slides about my organization to give you a bit of insight into my background. And then to make the case very clear, I will speak about some extreme things that can go wrong in the treatment with data, data fraud. Then will come the main dish about trust and responsible data management. I will end with only one slide on the role of journals before I will come to my conclusions. So DANS is an institute of the Netherlands, the Royal Netherlands Academy of Arts and Sciences, and of the Dutch Funding Organization for Research, NWO. Our mission is to promote permanent access to digital research information. And although we were created in 2005 in the current organizational setup, our first predecessor dates back to 1964, when the Steinmetz Foundation for the Social Sciences was set up. And the oldest data that we hold in our archive go back to the late 1950s, early 1960s. Our main activities and services are to encourage researchers to archive and reuse data. Our largest digital collections are in archaeology, social sciences, and history, but we also give services to other disciplines, and we are gradually moving into other domains as well. We provide access, as also Laurent Romary showed, through the NARCIS NL system to thousands of scientific data sets, electronic publications, and other research information in our country. We do data projects in collaboration with research communities and partner organizations, both within the Netherlands and internationally. We provide advice, training, and support. I will come back to the data seal of approval. We have a persistent identifier infrastructure that we maintain. And finally, we do some research and development into archiving of and access to digital information. Well, this morning I was quite surprised when I saw the Dutch national newspaper, the Volkskrant. It's of today, because it carried on its front page the data fraud case by Diederik Stapel, a social psychologist who appears to have entirely made up his data and has published over 50 publications that were based on such non-existent data. Also, many of his the people he worked with and even his PhD students often used the non-existent data of Stapel. It's for the first time that he was interviewed, although I heard from Professor Noord, who is also here in the audience, and who was chairing one of the committees investigating the data fraud by Stapel, that the original interview was in the New York Times. So if you can access the digital edition of that, you can also read that of this weekend. But the international press has paid a lot of attention to data fraud cases in the past few years. And I must say that our country has been plagued by a number of cases. There was the case of Diederik Stapel, which originally came out in September 2011. In November, there was the case of Don Poldermans in cardiovascular medicine, although it is not entirely clear whether that was true data fraud or whether he was more, let us say, not very accurate in the dealing with his data. Well, his inaccuracy was so big that he lost all belief. I mean, people did not believe him anymore. In June 2012, Dirk Smeesters, another social psychologist, was unmasked. And more recently, in October of last year, a cultural anthropologist appears to have made up a lot of his information that he used in his studies. A committee was set up by the Academy, not really because of these fraud cases. That was already an earlier plan to study data practices in the humanities, in the social sciences, and in science. The Schuit Committee did some a bit less than 100 interviews with researchers across the board and found that there was a lot of variation in data practices, both across disciplines, but also within disciplines. There was also some pattern that could be discerned. For instance, that data management in small-scale research was usually much more risky than in big science. And that is logical if you look at the last bullet there, that peer pressure appears to be a very important control mechanism. If more people are working together, it is much less easy to be fraudulent. There is more checks and balances. But the risky period, and that holds true again across the board, is that checks and balances seem to be missing, especially in the phase after a research proposal has been granted and before the publication. As I said, there are considerable differences among scientific disciplines, across scientific domains with respect to data management and data sharing. There is no time to go into the details here, but there is several studies, both within our country but also internationally from a European project, the so-called PARS Insight Project, that provide a lot of information on this subject. What is clear is, and that is the same in both studies, is that many researchers appear to be managing their own data and preserving that on their own computers, on their own hard disks. The Schuit Committee came up with a number of recommendations, and the Dutch Academy endorses those. Hans Klevers, the president of the KNAW, wrote in his foreword to the Schuit report that maximum access to data promotes the preeminently scientific approach, whereby researchers check one another's findings and build critically on one another's work. The Academy supports the free movement of data and scientific results. Taking into account variations across and within scientific disciplines, the free availability of data should be the default. This is not to say that it should always be the case. A motto that seems to work quite well is open if possible, protected if needed. Furthermore, we do not need additional rules or codes of conduct, but should focus on revitalizing existing rules and making these better known. Also in the education of future scientists, of students, that is. And finally, the examination of data management practices should become an integral part of official research evaluations. That should seems to be the right place to look into how data has been treated in research. Now over to the main dish of my presentation, talking about trust. What do we mean with that? And what do we rely on if we say that we rely on a trusted digital repository? Well, we had a famous, or we still have it, famous kind of suite, Rang, which used as its catchphrase, Rang is alleen Rang als er Rang op staat, meaning something that only if Rang is written on it, you can be sure that it is the real thing. But is that also the case in a trusted digital repository? Or is that true of those repositories of certain physical objects, such as that we have in our wallets, money, I mean, banks? The experience of the last few years are that even if they are supposed to be trusted, bad can happen to them and can happen to our money. It is important to know that things are not always what they say they are, and things do not always state what they are. It is not so simple as that. But trust in research data is, I think, a very important thing. We are talking about the quality of research here, essentially. So trust is at the very heart of the creating, the storing, and the sharing of data. And that means that there is responsibilities there for the data creators, the data users, the data repositories or archives, and the funders are maybe a bit out of place there, but well, in a way they are very important too, because they have the possibility to put certain requirements of those categories of actors. And if we talk about data quality, we talk about, I think, the subjects that are, that is not my opinion, but is quite usually taken, the aspects that are there, but something that I don't want to go into now. What is trust built on? Well, I don't think that it is so very different in digital archives than in other things, even in human relationships. Even you might think secretly of the relationship to a very special person that you have. Perhaps the first thing, if we're talking about trust, is to dedicate yourself. And in terms of a digital archive, that would be to have a mission statement that is clear, that clearly states that the archive, what the archive wants to do. The second is to do what you promise, and in terms of a digital archive, that is to have a good reputation, a reputation of sincerity, of competence, and that not only for a very short time, but for a long time. And the third would be to be transparent, to have your behavior, your activities checked by peer review or by a process of formal certification. And I very much like, personally, the cartoon on the right-hand bottom that says, in principle, we're happy with the trust idea as long as it's properly monitored and regulated. Now, I'm not a fetishist in rules and regulations, but I think a certain degree of rules and regulations should be good in this area. The UK Data Archive puts on its website the first idea of pledging, of making a statement, of a mission statement, and it says, any organization which provides access to data over a long period of time should be fully trusted only with a public statement describing the practices they follow and the provenance of data they provide. Standards of trust are critical. Oops. And we see that a number of the research infrastructures in the humanities and the social sciences that were already mentioned in earlier presentations, and of which we can see some work in the room next door, also hold this certification and trust idea very important. For instance, Clarin Eric says that Clarin centers need to have a proper and clearly specified repository system and participate in a quality assessment procedure as proposed by the Data Seal of Approval, or, it's a long abbreviation, REC approaches. REC will come back in a moment. I won't read the other ones, but DARIA and CESDA, CESDA is the Council of European Social Science Data Archives, stipulate similar things. But do we really need certification, official certification of digital archives? And to be honest, there is some discussion going on there. Not everybody is convinced of that. There are some people who say no, and in this case, I will also be the devil's advocate. Some people say that trustworthiness or certification, it should actually read, of digital repositories is an illusion. It's too complicated to measure. It's impossible to maintain over time. It is too informal, too expensive, and too time-consuming. The positive arguments for certification are that there are already, and I will return to the three that you can read there, there is already a number of levels of certification which are fairly clearly written down and fairly balanced and with good procedures to do an audit. And those different levels can also be used for different needs. Then again, to the no side, objective and consistent auditing is an illusion, some people say. For instance, Helen Thibault, who said literally, when this was discussed on a conference that was in particular about digital preservation, if auditing becomes a career, what will happen to objectivity? And she and others also believe that it is impossible to guarantee consistency around the globe. Well, against this, one could say that auditing is a career already in many other areas, including areas that have to do with quality control. And next, perhaps the needs in China or in South Africa are a bit different from those in Germany, or the approaches, or the approach in Italy may be a bit different from that in Russia. But some variation according to local requirements, why should that not be permitted? I already said in the previous slide that there is a number of different levels of standardization of quality of certification of digital repositories. There are essentially those three, the Data Seal of Approval, the DIN, the Deutsche Industrie Norm, the German, and the International Standards Organization Norm. And they function more or less as the bronze, silver, and gold, where the ISO certification is the highest one, the most encompassing. Basic certification is granted to repositories which obtain the Data Seal of Approval. Extended certification is granted to basic certification repositories, which in addition perform a structured, externally reviewed, and publicly available self-audit based on either the ISO or the DIN. And formal certification is then when a full external audit and certification based on ISO and DIN is carried out. The three certification methods, so to speak, also work together in a European context. I will return to that in a later slide. Perhaps a few words on the Data Seal of Approval that originated at my own institute. It was our initiative, although it is now governed by an international board. It is fairly simple. It gives 16 guidelines. It is based on a self-assessment, which is then inspected by peer review. It is highly transparent. What an archive does with respect to digital preservation is publicly and openly available. And so far, 14 organizations have this seal of approval. It is important to know, by the way, that the data seal does not only put criteria for digital repositories, but also for the data producers and for the data users, because it's like a chain. The data producers are responsible for the quality of the research data, and the users are responsible for the correct use of the data, incorporating, for instance, also referring to who collected the data in a correct way. The DIN norm is based on the criterion catalog Vertrouwenswürdige Digitale Langzeitarchive, NESTOR, and instigated by the Deutsche Nationalbibliothek, and contains some 34 criteria. And the ISO 16363 is based on the Open Archival Information System, and here it is maybe a bit too technical for you. And there is also the Trusted Repository Audit and Certification Track. You may forget that, but it is maybe interesting to know that it contains over 100 metrics that you have to comply with. In various places, there is ongoing work on trust. For instance, in the so-called Aparson project, and I put the brochure on trust from the Aparson project on the table. Aparson stands for Alliance for Permanent Access to the Record of Science, Network of Excellence. Then there is those three certification methods that are already working together in the European framework for audit and certification, and that are now seeking collaboration with the ICSU World Data System, which has perhaps what could be considered as a fourth method of certification, although they call it accreditation. There's no time to go into the details here, and probably also not the need. And then in the recently founded Research Data Alliance, there is also active a group on certification. Before my conclusion, one slide on the journals. Because the journals, in my view, also play an important role. The quality control of scientific output concentrates on publications, and we have a well-known system to do that quality control. It may have some flaws, as Laurent Romary said, but still the system of peer review is essentially a good thing. And even it could be improved or modified in the digital world, still we need specialists looking at the work of other specialists to get some value judgment. But very few journals so far have a data availability policy, although the number is increasing, be it in the one domain faster than in the other. And the idea of such a data availability policy is that when a paper is submitted for peer-reviewed publication, data access for the reviewers of that paper is required. And at a second stage, when the paper is published, the readers should be able to access the data. And usually then the data is to be deposited in such a trusted repository, although by no means it is already completely clear which repositories would be available for what data. And in some cases, it is the journals themselves, for instance, who think that they have a task to maintain the data. And it is also not impossible that some publishers might move into this area. Nevertheless, what the data repositories are usually doing is doing some marginal checking. They do not have the expertise and the time and the money to go into all the details of the data sets themselves. They do worry about the metadata, the descriptions, the formats, whether the privacy of the respondents in the data set is well taken care of, anonymization, that kind of stuff, but not the research contents. What is more logical to do than also to introduce reviews for data? Well, there has been a lot of talking about this subject, but only very few cases, to my knowledge, are there where it is put into practice. And one of those examples is again by my own institute, where we have now some 750 reviews. I must admit, it is still a pilot, but the system appears to be working. I come to my conclusions. Sharing data cannot prevent data fraud, but it increases the transparency of research and therefore reduces the risk of fraud, or rather, it makes it probably more easy, more possible to detect it. If the data is not shared, as the final point said, that increases the risk of sloppy science and increases the risk of data fraud. Archiving and publishing data via trustworthy data repositories increases the reliance on data. And finally, funders should require that project proposals contain a data management plan, and that such plans contain a section on the accessibility of the data after publication of the results. And hence, they should stimulate the creation of more and more trustworthy digital archives. Thank you.